back to the Jeff Force Show at FM Talk 106.5, 35 minutes after the hour on this Friday morning. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have made it to Friday. Well, this is like the longest week. Doesn't seem like Friday yet, though, either. But thankfully, maybe we catch a little breather here over the weekend. Still to come on the program, my friend Blair and Coleman, radio host up in Auburn, and State Senator Chris Elliott. That's in the next hour, so make sure that you stay tuned in for that. Ought to be a great finality of the program today. Joining us now, always glad to have this gentleman on. Wish he was sticking around a little longer in Washington, D.C. for us, but Congressman Bradley Byrne joins us on the line. Congressman, how are you this morning?
Jeff, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Just, I guess, surviving the dream at this point because it you know, it's hectic out there, Congressman. Just first off, your thoughts on Tuesday's election. The outcomes look pretty good in Alabama, uncertain nationally.
Yeah, things in Alabama turned out pretty much the way I thought they were. I knew the president would get close to 65%. He got either 62 or 63%. And I knew he would carry the other statewide Republicans with him and the congressional candidates. And all that worked out just fine. So, really pleased with the results in Alabama and not surprised at all. National level, I'm not surprised at that either. I always thought this race was going to be close. I never believed all those people on CNN talking about a blue wave, permanent realignment in American politics, blah, blah, blah. All of their stuff turned out to be wrong, which is great. And now it's causing some real fractures within the Democratic Party. They had a phone call of all the Democrats in the House of Representatives yesterday, conference call with Speaker Pelosi, and it really melted down very quickly with Abigail Spanberger from Virginia dropping the F-bomb. I mean, just they are really at one another's throats right now, which is good for us.
Yeah, that coalition on the Democrat side of the House, they lost seats, it looks like, when it's all said and done. I think Leader McCarthy's even talking about that. There's a possibility that when it's all said and done, there could be more Republican members in the House than Democrats. But as things stand now, Pelosi's got a very fragile coalition she has to deal with in the House of Representatives.
Well, if we pick up 10 to 12 seats, which looks like what it's going to be, she's going to have a very thin margin. And the people that she's got from swing districts that survived this week are scared to death of the votes that they've been put through because of AOC and Pelosi and the line. So I'm going to be curious to see where she gets her votes from. So we're going back next week, I mean, a week after next. What is she going to do? She's going to bring a bunch more of those left-wing messaging bills that Mitch McConnell's not going to take up, make everybody in her side walk the game plan? It's kind of entertaining for me to watch what they're doing over there.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, and she's just a vote or two away from losing her speakership if all this holds together. I mean, she's got a very fine line to walk, and Nancy Pelosi in that situation, that's not her element. She's used to being kind of the queen. She's used to being the queen bee and you know, having people do what she needs them to do. I don't think that's going to be the case anymore if she holds on.
I think it's going to be really hard for her to satisfy some of those swing district Democrats who are mad. They're mad in general, but I think they're angry at her because they don't feel like there's been any accountability for these stupid decisions that she's made, not to work with us on trying to get another CARES Act bill and pushing all these crazy left-wing bills that have no chance of going anywhere in the Senate. I mean, like I say, it's going to be entertaining to watch them. Now, going forward, we're going to be very united in our conference, the Republican House conference. We've got a conference call of our own coming up in an hour and a half, and it's going to be the first thing that's going to be on our minds is what can we do to help the president get across the line. The second thing on our minds is what can we do to better position ourselves for 2 years from now. And here's the good news there. We kept a lot of state houses in the election this week, we being Republicans, and that means those legislatures will be redrawing congressional districts after the census is complete this year, and those will be Republican-leaning districts. So that puts us in an even better position for us to retake the House in 2022. So we've got some real opportunities ahead of us, and I won't be in the Congress, next Congress, to be a part of that directly, but just because I'm leaving Congress doesn't mean I'm not still vitally interested in making sure we get a Republican majority. I'm going to do everything I can to help them.
Well, tell me this. You mentioned seeing what you could do with the, in regards to this presidential election. What are the tools in the tool chest for members of Republican in the House, for Republican members in the House, to help President Trump get across the finish line?
Well, I don't know. Right now, it looks like, you know, we're still counting ballots in certain places, which drives everybody crazy. But we've got 3 or 4 lawsuits out there, too. If they need me to go somewhere and help with one of the lawsuits, I'm more than happy to help with that. It looks like we know we're going to have at least one runoff in the Senate seat in Georgia, and we all need to make sure we're pouring our energies into that between now and January the 5th. So I think there are things we can be doing, we Republicans, to help the cause here. And I think that's the first type of conversation we're going to have during this conference call is, what can we as House Republican members do to help the president and help the Senate get across the line?
Yeah, and win or lose, the presidency, those 2 races in Georgia. So just it's a very early reaction to some of this. There's an element in the Republican Party that's just upset. This seems like the election is being taken away from them. There's also another element that's like, well, you know, we did our part, and it just feels like our vote doesn't matter. What do you think the Republican Party needs to do to make sure that there isn't this level of complacency in what I think is for all the marbles in January with potentially 2 Senate seats up in Georgia?
I don't think we're going to be complacent at all. I don't feel complacency in the phone calls that I've been in on it at all. I hear a sense of excitement and commitment, determination. That's a good word. We're pretty darn determined to hang on to the Senate, and I think we are. And I know everybody on national television wants to write the president off, but I don't think any of us are writing him off. I think we all think he still has a chance, and we want to help him get across the line.
It's just, but you fully anticipate that the energy is still going to be there within the ranks of the Republican Party?
Yeah, I sense a whole lot of positive energy among Republicans right now. I mean, we did so much better than all of those people on television were saying we were going to do. And we know that we've got the winning hand here. We know that our message is the right message, and we know that their message is not the right message. Look, if this election were held in a year when we didn't have a pandemic and a recession at the same time, we would have had a red wave. There's no question about it. But we were swimming upstream against this disease and swimming upstream against these bad economic numbers. It's got a little better today. So, you know, I think our message is the right message. I think our positions on the issues are the right positions. And we clearly have the right candidates in a lot of these races on Tuesday. So you get the right message, you get the right candidates, even though we got outspent by an enormous amount of money. I mean, it's just unreal how much money they spent against us. And we still did pretty well, even in this pandemic, even with the recession. So I think most of us are pumped up, ready to keep fighting on.
Congressman, something else that, you know, that's all of a sudden the issue of the day is election integrity, and some of your colleagues on Capitol Hill, both the House and the Senate side, that seems to be a priority, is to do something about elections to ensure the public has confidence in our election processes. Is there much that Congress at the federal level needs to do?
Well, typically we leave election laws to state governments. But looking at some of these states' laws and processes, I've got constitutional concerns about the way they handle them. I think that's part of the challenge you're seeing in these lawsuits that the Trump team's filing. I've got just basic concerns about whether we're getting accurate numbers. I'm not saying that they're, you know, counting votes that don't exist, but who are the people behind those votes? And how are they being submitted? And under some of these states' laws, like California's crazy, their ballots are still coming in. I mean, that's just nuts. There's no way that you can guarantee the integrity of an election under those circumstances. So I think it's legitimate to ask those questions and to see if there isn't some limited federal role that we can play to make sure that the elections for federal offices at least are done right.
Well, it's always going to wind up this way. I guess one of the things proposed. What would be speeds kind of harsher when it comes to penalties on elements of fraud? So if there's a federal election on the ballot and there's this ballot harvesting, or which is I think legal in some states, that the federal government needs to say no, you can't use these practices that are, you know, that are electioneering.
Well, I think, you know, ballot harvesting is a crime in some states and perfectly legal in others. I think that's crazy. That needs to be uniform. And I really think a ballot that doesn't show up on election day should not be counted in any state in this country. Now, how it shows up, what process they use for making sure that the person's the right person, I don't mind leaving that up to the states. But this idea that ballots can be coming in after the day of the election, that's just nuts. And it's one of the things that causes people in America to say this stuff is phony baloney. So we do have a stake in making sure that the people of America have confidence that our elections are open and fair and that all appropriate ballots are counted. Now, if that happens and my side loses, that's the way democracy works. I accept that. But if we've got these games that they're playing in some of these states to try to basically have an unfair election, an unfair count, that's a different thing altogether.
Well, I mean, there's just, you know, you have Democrat, you know, governors and secretary of states, and attorneys general, that lead these states, that they seem to put their party before, you know, any of the integrity of an elections. And what is the recourse other than the voters there had to vote these guys out? But on the other hand, do you really want to, you know, it seems like a slippery slope if we start getting the federal government, you get the camel's nose under the tent there, over time, the federal government putting in place restrictions or regulations on elections. I mean, where do you draw the line, do you think?
Well, I think there's certain basic things that we could make uniform. But like I say, I want to leave the details of all that up to the states, because I don't want Washington dictating to Alabama how we do our elections here. But there's some things that are so, to me, blatantly wrong, blatantly unfair, that I think we might ought to consider some federal legislation to make sure they don't do that sort of thing. And I think when they're counting votes, there ought to be equal numbers of people there for both sides watching the process, I mean, physically in the room watching. And we've had some issues with that this week, which concerns me a great deal. At the end of the day, Jeff, we have to have confidence that our system is going to work and produce a fair and accurate result. And I don't know where we're going to end up with this thing. We've still got, in my prediction is, we've still got days, if not weeks, to go. You know, we didn't get an election decision until December the 12th. We may have that in this one. But if that's what it takes to make sure we get an accurate count, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, isn't that the big part of this? It seems to me that no matter who wins or loses, the ultimate objective here ought to be making sure that the public has confidence in the election, because if the public loses confidence in these processes, then that opens the door for some really bad things to happen.
There's absolutely no question about that, and it concerns me greatly, because we've already had enough problems with people's distrust in basic American institutions. And we don't need to have people distrust our election process. And, you know, some of these things, some of these practices they have in some of these states, you know, lead to people having questions about legitimacy of votes. And that's bad. So I hope we can have a better national discussion about that. But in the meantime, we've got this election to decide, and we need to make sure this election is handled right.
As far as this election goes, you know, whatever happens with the presidential election, and then let's say, for the sake of argument, Joe Biden is named president-elect, you gain seats in the House, and it looks like maybe, depending on what happens in Georgia in January, that the Senate's going to be that firewall. While you don't want the election's not ideal, the outcome, it could have been a whole lot worse, especially if you believe the polls.
Yeah, I mean, if you believe the polls, we were looking at increased numbers of Democratic seats in the House, the Democratic flip of the Senate, and a Democratic president, and they were already talking about, you know, a $2 trillion climate change piece of legislation, packing the court, reversing the tax reform law that we passed a couple of years ago, all that stuff. Now all that's out the window because Mr. McConnell's not going to take any of that crazy stuff up. And here's another problem for President Biden. When he nominates people to be cabinet secretaries or one of these federal judgeships, I mean, Mitch McConnell's not just going to accept anybody he puts out there. So if he comes forward with Bernie Sanders to be, you know, Secretary of Labor, Mitch McConnell's saying, we're not making Bernie Sanders Secretary of Labor. Or if he comes up with some crazy left-wing judge, Mitch McConnell's saying, we're not taking up crazy left-wing judges. It really crimps their ability to accomplish these crazy far-out socialist things they've been talking about. But what also crimps them is that they're having that internal division within their own party about whether they should be doing that stuff. So this has actually turned out to be, outside of the presidential election, this has actually turned out to be a really positive thing, not just for Republicans, but I think very positive for the country, because the country's gotten an opportunity to speak in an election and say, we don't want socialism.
Carson, we've got to leave it there. We're out of time, but I want to thank you for your time as always, and let's try to do this again in the future.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm still for two more months. I told Jerry Carl that I still have this seat for two more months.
we got you down for it. Congressman Bradley Byrd, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
So story ends, we're told. I don't need your prayers, it's true.